Well, I think that one of the things that's really important for all of us to be aware of is I'm talking personal, I'm talking professional, and as you just mentioned, I'm talking those conversations with me, myself, and I at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because, Tara, I don't know about you, but I don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with my brain going, Amy Kay, you're a rock star. You got the world by the tail, girl. No. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, do. So I think that the idea of remembering that when people want to share their wins, stay focused on it. When people want to share their pain, stay there with them so that they feel seen, heard, and understood.
I truly believe that in the last 2 years, we saw this shift within education that really kind of caught a lot of people off guard. Some people excelled, other people's failed. What do you see as the future of education, especially within the last 2 years moving forward? What's the future of education?
I think it's.
Welcome to The Bottom Line Upfront with Terry Thompson, the show where we get to the bottom line upfront of the most important issues facing life and business. And now, here's your host for this episode, Terry Thompson.
Amy, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for letting me in.
I love it. Amy, you are a truly phenomenal woman. I just want you to know that I enjoy your message. I enjoy your leadership. I enjoy your energy. Man, I'm ready to rock. How about you?
I am. I was just going to say vice versa, right back at you, energetic bunner. And I think that one of the things that's been so fun is you and I have bantered back and forth for a long time. So I'm so glad we're finally getting to connect.
Yeah, some them schedules can be tough, man. I'm telling you, we all got a lot of different things going on. But man, when that moment happens, you got to hold on to it really tight and just kind of ride it. You have a beautiful message, and I want to kind of share that with the world here tonight. So everybody that's watching here on the live stream, everybody that's gonna watch the replay, this is Amy Kay. She is a truly phenomenal woman. She gets it. She has this website, shegetsit.com, amyk.com. She has a couple of books out, Get It and The Secrets Leaders Keep. But here's the bottom line up front. We're going to dive into the tough little conversations that we have within ourselves. So she has this great saying, life happens one conversation at a time. Amy, let's dive into that. What are your thoughts on conversations that we have with ourselves?
Well, I think that one of the things that's really important for all of us to be aware of is I'm talking personal, I'm talking professional, and as you just mentioned, I'm talking those conversations with me, myself, and I at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because, Tara, I don't know about you, but I don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with my brain going, Amy Kay, you're a rock star. You got the world by the tail, girl. No. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, do. I can't believe myself. Of course, I'm going back to like what I said in 1996, right? So I think for all of us, that inner voice, that inner critic is so harsh and so cruel. And we give more compassion and grace to everybody else than we do to ourselves. In fact, I have a real world story that just happened over the weekend. So we went to a corporate party, and there was this woman who, you just can't make this stuff up. She was gorgeous, probably 15 years younger than me. And of course, my inner voice is like, I don't know. Do I go up and say hi? This is awkward. I don't know anybody. I'm with Scott. Scott knows all these people, but I don't know anybody. But I go up and I start talking to her. And we have this lovely conversation. And this is how she closes. Thank you. Thank you for being like so courageous to talk to me. She said, because she says, I didn't know anybody here and I didn't feel like I belonged. So it's like we all have these imposter syndrome, inner critic thoughts that are constantly rolling around our mind.
Isn't the power of thank you is just it's enormous. A lot of people do not really understand the power of a thank you. Whether you're right, whether you're wrong, whether the conversation is positive or negative, a simple thank you could really lead that conversation in a whole different way.
Well, it's huge and it's vulnerable and it's heart to heart, it's connection. So I think so many of us are either in a power play or, we're nervous. And what we don't realize is magical phrases like thank you, magical phrases like no thank you, magical phrases like might we agree or how might we. These are the things that can change the tone and tenor of a conversation and redirect your entire life. And I don't mean that to be dramatic, it's just true.
Yeah, you know. The words are powerful. I remember years ago, George Carlin had this absolutely amazing thing where he was talking about words are our playground. I won't go into the whole seven words thing, but you know where I was going with that.
Yeah.
So George Carlin talked about words. Words are powerful. They're our playground. You know, the same words that can hurt can also heal, but it's all a matter of how we use them. And I love how you use words. Over the last, I believe, week, you were going live and you were talking about these different words like or and but and. And I love that. And a lot of people really don't understand the power of that word that's in the middle, or and but. But I really want to dive into something, because you are a leadership expert. And I truly believe that with the advent of social media and a lot of different things that's going on out there, I'm just going to say it like this: leadership or likership?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'm a fan of leadership. I really am. And leaders have to make tough decisions that not everybody's going to like. But you have to ask, is it for the greater good for all? Mm. And if you're doing it for the greater good for all, then there might be a few people that suffer along the way. But that doesn't mean that you don't have empathy for that. And that doesn't mean that you don't show up for those individuals. And I think that, as you pointed out, using your words to show empathic intelligence, to let people know that you understand, that you see them, that you're being a witness to what it is that they're going through. Not everybody's going to agree with you. Everybody, you know, we all know with social media, as you just say, everybody's got an opinion for likership. But I think that if we can just take a step back, one of the things that I think that's so important is that small phrases can change everything. So for instance, a lot of times we feel envy, and, you know, and we'll blurt out something like, oh, I'm so jealous. Oh, I'm so jealous. And what's fascinating to me is that if you can catch yourself and understand that your jealousy is normal, that if I looked at you and I said, Terry, I'm so happy for you. I am so happy for you. I've kept the spotlight on you. I haven't robbed you of any of the juicy goodness that you've been blessed with. But so many of us will change a conversation and make it about us instead of staying focused on the person that we're talking to. And I think we all can relate to the person that after a conversation will be like, Terry, that was the best conversation ever. And Terry's like, yeah, because it was all about you. So I think that the idea of remembering that when people want to share their wins, stay focused on it. When people want to share their pain, stay there with them so that they feel seen, heard, and understood.
I love that. Yeah, I have what's called a victory. I love that you said celebrate wins, because I have what's called a victory day. It's that one day out of the month that I get to celebrate like my wins, to celebrate the victories, the things that I've accomplished. And I will take myself out shopping, get a massage, eat some, you know, a nice dinner. I will celebrate that. How do you celebrate your wins? How do you celebrate your victories?
All the time. And the reason that I celebrate in small ways. It can be an hour cup of coffee in journaling. It can be a walk by Torrey Pine State Beach. I live in San Diego. Mm-hmm. It can be a celebrated meal out. It can be a treat. Yeah, maybe I buy myself something, or I just gift myself a little bit of time back on a hobby or an activity. But here's why I do it often. So many of us think that self-care is, I'm going to go to the spa in 9 months. Mm. You know, I'm going to do this at the end of the year. Self-care is a daily practice. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of the word practice. Leadership is a practice. Self-leadership is a practice. Communication is a practice. Self-care, celebrating our wins, it's a practice.
Yeah, 100%. They're one of my friends is in the audience here. Shawana Kay, I have her book right back over here, and she talks about putting yourself first. You know, and self-care is one of those things that I don't think a lot of people really understand the full benefits of self-care, because self-care is not selfish. You are not being selfish by putting yourself first, and there's a lot of people that don't understand the full benefits of that. When you put yourself first, you can take care of others, because if you can't take care of yourself, you will not have the energy to be able to take care of others. So what is the number one thing that you do to take care of yourself? What is an Amy K self-care routine?
Self-care is, I do a ton of journaling. So I'm a voracious reader, and I do a lot of journaling. And journaling is for my mental health. Journal is processing for the more healthy, positive, forward-focused thinking strategy. Journaling is to get discernment and clarity and to touch base with my inner voice. There's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of voices. And you and I, we preach to the same choir, saying that you have to lead yourself well before you can lead others well. And so that doesn't mean that we're perfect, and it doesn't mean that every day is rainbows and unicorns. But my self-care routine is I have a morning routine. I have a morning discipline of practice, journaling, and a cup of coffee, although I drink decaf, so maybe that doesn't count. But then I have a very disciplined approach to my week. And it isn't about, so here's, I'll just be a little controversial on this too, Terry. I think balance is a crock. I think balance is a total crock. And I think the more we go in search of balance, the more stressed out we get. Mm. So every week I prioritize what's most important to me that week. And so my weeks look different based on my shifting priorities.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's a daily thing. So I created my own planner. I saw all these planners that was out there. I mean, I bought them all. I got every single one of them and I started using. I was like, man, this is crap. I was like, I can't use this. I can't do this. This doesn't serve me well. So what I did was I created my own planner, and I call it the Bottom Line Upfront Planner. And it's the most important thing that you can get done that day in order to consider the day a success, the bottom line up front. I truly believe when you filter all of the crap that's going on out there in the world and you can focus on that one thing, that most important thing, I call it the bottom line up front, you will be more focused to be able to take the action. Now, there's some other things that goes in there, but really, here's the number one thing that I truly believe. If you want to achieve success in every day, have a bottom line up front. Have crystal clear clarity on what is your intention for the day, and then in the day with an after action review. How did your day go? Did you achieve the bottom line up front? So when you're taking steps or actions throughout the day, what is your process at the end of the day for reviewing how your day goes? For me, I call it the after action review.
Yeah, no, by the way, this is a New York Times bestseller, Terry. Hint, hint, hint. Bottom line up front. I can just see it in every bookstore on number one bestseller. So I totally get what you're saying, and I love that. And I think that, for me, reflection comes on a couple different levels. So I have a reflection of impact. So one of my reflective questions is, who have I served today? How have I helped today? How have I moved another heart, another soul? And it sounds hallmarky until you meet me. Like, I really believe it. Like, whose souls have I moved forward and have I impacted? And then I look at, have my biggest goals for the year, my biggest goals for the month moved forward? Did they get my time and attention? Did they get my heart? Did they get my... So I take responsibility as accepting care and management, whether it's for a person or a project, a passion. It's accepting the care and management of. So I look at the end of the day and I said, did I accept the care and management of what are my most important priorities today? Mm-hmm. And between that and moving the lives forward and making sure that, you know, I've eaten some really good food because I'm a foodie, that's a pretty good day for me. I'm big on exercise. Exercise, I get a little cranky because I got to get my wiggles out.
Yeah, I struggle with it. So I was in the military for 24 years. I served in the Army for 24 years, multiple combat tours. I am 100% disabled, so I got a few things that I just absolutely 100% cannot do. But I do something, and I think that's valuable, you know, to be able to do something. I'm 51 years old, 100% disabled, got a lot of things that I cannot do. So to stay fit, I truly believe, one, it starts within the mind, and then everything that starts within the mind is really kind of an extension of that. But what would you recommend, or how would you tell somebody or coach somebody, here's how you can stay fit, one thing at a time, here's how you can do that? How would you coach someone with that?
Well, first, I'm going to thank you for your service. So I got to stop and have just a stellar, heartful moment. I don't think any of us would be here without our extraordinary men and women of service. So thank you for that. And I'm going to go right back to what you said. What works for you? That you have to really figure out, because exercise, a diet, and by diet, I don't mean losing weight. Diet, I mean what you're putting into your body on a daily basis is your diet. So I say, what are you going to feed yourself that works for your system, for your body? Mm-hmm. Some people are gluten-free, some people aren't, you know? Mm-hmm. Some people are addicted to dark chocolate, you know, other
I love that too.
But I think that in all seriousness, it's finding what works for you. So I'm a big believer in listening to your body. And if your body's craving something, then it clearly needs something. Now, sometimes what it needs is comfort. It doesn't need calcium from the ice cream container. It needs emotional comfort from that ice cream container. But really and truly, when it comes to a fitness regimen, what works for you and your body type, And then what's your personality? Because some people thrive on discipline and doing the same thing every single day. Other people like to mix it up. And I used to force myself to jump on the treadmill, and even if I was like resisting it, like just on every cell of my being, I'd be like, you have to do this, right? And then I met a coach years ago and she said, why would you torture yourself? You love to exercise. You like to get your wiggles out. Why don't you tune in and ask yourself what you're in the mood to do? Exercise got a heck of a lot easier after that, Terry, because it was like, what do I want to do today? And then it was like, well, then it's a joy to go do it.
Yeah. How important is competition? And here's the reason why I ask that, because I truly believe, quick shout out to Evan Carmichael, who just popped into the chat here as well, too. So I just want to say hey to Evan. But how important is competition? Because I truly believe that we are really competing against ourselves. But yet when you start to compete against others, I think that there's people that are out there that are kind of sensitive to that. What are your thoughts about competition?
Well, to me, the competition is a signal of your inner desire and what you want. The same thing with envy. So a lot of people dismiss envy and say, oh, envy's a bad thing. Envy is a protective persona. Envy is your inner knowing saying, there's a piece of that that I want. And that keeps you resourceful. So I don't like comparison. I like competing against myself. So for instance, if I sold 10 things last week, I want to sell 12 this week. Mm. If I served 500 women last week, I want to serve 505 women this week. Like, that's that inner competition. But here's the thing. Competition is a good eustress, not stress. It's a good eustress. And eustress is not cortisol, heart disease, I'm all, you know, stressed out. Eustress is the adrenaline. It's the motivation. It's so when I see somebody like Terry speak on stage, and I'm like, wow, Terry's a motivational speaker. Are you inspiring me to play better? Are you inspiring me to go out and serve with even more energy? That's the kind of competition that fires me up.
You know, years ago, I wrote within one of my books, and it was a powerful quote. And when I wrote it down, it's still relevant today. And I use it quite often. And it goes like this: don't defeat me, complete me. And I truly believe that kind of ties into the constructive versus destructive criticism. So as coaches, as teachers, trainers, mentors, leaders, if you will, it's one of those things to where when you're giving that feedback to someone, there's a difference between constructive and destructive. How do you complete someone with a combination of the two? Because I think that there's value. I truly believe that there is value in both. But I think it's in how you position it. What are your thoughts on constructive and destructive criticism when given feedback?
Well, it starts with connection. So rather than a power play, make it a play date. And really show up for true connection. And then if you think about what connection really does, you're leaving the energy exchange stronger than when it started. You're leaving the other person stronger than when we started. So I'm all about feedback. If you're building somebody up and you're giving them the tools and resources to be more successful as they go forward, what happens is most time people get feedback and they feel worse afterwards, and therefore their performance goes down. And so I have a long history of working with highly motivated, high-performing salespeople. And they're super sensitive to criticism, right? Because they're going all out. Most go-getters, most type A folks don't like criticism. So when you can talk about their strengths, you can talk about what's working, you can talk about some of the challenges that you see on the horizon, and you support them in surmounting those challenges, surmounting those obstacles. And I'm not talking about a fake rah-rah, sis, boom, bah. I'm talking about a conversation that's so deep that we walk away connected, you feel more energized, more expanded, and you're operating on a higher frequency than when I found you. I'm going to kind of go back to old school advice that my mom gave me way back in the early 70s, Terry. She's like, you leave it better than you found it. And I believe that goes for our relationships and conversations too.
I believe that wholeheartedly as well, too. One of the things that we did within the military was called developmental counseling. Mm-hmm. So I was in the military. I also worked in a corporate setting as well, too. And I truly believe that one of the biggest things that's lacking, especially within the corporate setting, is that developmental counseling at the end of year performance reviews. And it's like, hey, I want you to write your performance review. Tell me what you did at the end of the year. I'm like, dude, you're my boss. You tell me what I did throughout the year. You didn't counsel me. You didn't develop me. You didn't send me. You didn't help me out with my career path. And I think it really kind of puts the onus back on, and when you and I were chatting before we went here, and I was like, I'll take ownership of that. And I believe that's truly powerful as well, too. I think that a lot of people don't really take ownership of their own destiny. But at the end of that, I truly believe that there's a leadership responsibility and a self-responsibility to develop yourself, to counsel yourself, to have a plan, to have kind of a career map. What are your thoughts on that right there? Counseling, developing yourself, career path.
Preach. It's a two-way street. So one of the things that, you know, every generation brings challenges. Mm-hmm. Every generation brings solutions. If we go back, the traditionalists were like, I'll just keep my head down. Nobody's talking to me. I must be doing a good job, right? And now we've got these new Generation Z that's like, you know, text me every day on how I'm doing. So I think, and by the way, don't leave a voicemail because I won't listen to it. Yeah. But I think you bring up a really good point. You have to ask for feedback. Mm. If you're not getting it, it's your job. It is. It's your onus of responsibility to go. So let's say, Terry, I work for you. One of the things that you mentioned is that you're going to come at the end of the year, whether that's a calendar fiscal year that ends in December or July or some other month, and you're going to come and you're going to be like, oh, Amy Kay, you're a 4 out of 5. That means nothing. And by the way, it's 11 months too late. I don't want to know that I dropped the ball back in February in December, right? So I love the idea of giving people real-time feedback on a regular cadence that's resonant, that's relevant. But here's what I also believe. If you're not getting it, ask. Because it shows the people above you that, one, you care, you're committed, you want to get better. And then the other thing that it does, too, is it gives you a chance to perform and advance your career faster than by staying silent. And so that's why I'm hugely passionate about using your voice to speak up, to own your own career, to set that path in motion. And by the way, one of the things that I just taught, so this is relevant as of yesterday, I was just having a conversation with a gentleman yesterday, and he's like, we've had a lot of people out for COVID again. He said, you know, I've been doing a lot of extra responsibilities again. He said, is it okay to ask for a raise in this climate? And I said, it's absolutely okay. It's how you do it. If you go into your boss and you're like, I need a raise, I've been doing double shifts, you're not as likely to get it as if you start that conversation with, how can I become a more integrated, successful team player? How can I continue to add more responsibility? How can I help you execute on your vision? By the way, if I do all this stuff, then it's worthy of a raise and a promotion, so let's talk about that. So again, it's just finding the ways to promote yourself in a way that's not egotistical, but that creates a win for everybody.
Yeah, and it's all about the value that you bring and you deliver, because oftentimes, and I've seen it. I remember years ago, I walked into and I don't even want to say leader, maybe manager at best. Yeah, I walked into this guy's office, and I really had something heavy on my heart. I wanted to ask him about something. And you know, and asking is powerful. It truly is. But I went into this guy's office, and I'll never forget it. And I labeled this guy the worst leader I ever had. I wrote about him in one of my books. And it's like, I went in, I was like, hey, boss, you know, I need your help. You know, can you help me with this? And this guy looked at me straight in the face, and he goes, it's not my job to train you. Oh, my goodness. Like, I lost it at that point. I lost all respect. I didn't want to talk to the guy after that. But yet, here's a guy that's in a position of increased authority and responsibility. But yet, he literally just let go of his responsibility right there when he said it wasn't his job to train you. How do we develop the future leaders of tomorrow?
Oh, do you have 5 hours? No. Well, I think one of the things is that it hurts to hear that,
yeah,
and you're not alone. I think a lot of us have worked for somebody or with somebody that was never taught what it really means to have, one, emotional intelligence, two, leadership skills. And it is one of the hardest jobs on the planet. So whether you're leading your kids and you're a parent, you're leading a family, you're leading a team, you're in some type of position of of you're supposed to be the mentor, you're supposed to be the coach, you're supposed to be the values, moral compass, and nobody teaches you how to do that, it's really, really hard. And here's why I think it's so sad too. The ripple effect is enormous. So you take on a leadership position, you take on an extraordinary responsibility to serve, because you're not just serving in that moment. You're serving in all the consequential moments of that person then going out and leading their people, going back to their families, going back to their communities, their charities, their causes. And so one of the things that I think is the most important thing that we can be teaching on the planet right now is self-leadership followed by leadership.
Yeah, I believe that. And that I was going to ask that, but I think you may have just answered that. What is the biggest opportunity that you see within leadership? Right. There's a lot of it that's out there, but I don't think that people are taking full advantage of the opportunities within leadership that's out there. But in your perspective, what do you see as the biggest opportunity for leadership right
empathic
now?
Empathic intelligence. And I say it so quickly because it's so missing in our world right now. And in the 1950s, we would talk about empathy as woo-woo. And I don't know if you know that term, but woo-woo, oh, you know, oh, let's not get out, you know, the gypsy captains and talk about, you know, empathy. Now, it's almost like it's a non-starter if you don't have it, because our world has evolved, thank goodness, to a level of consciousness where the respect and the dignity that people are now expecting, which is fantastic, the ability now, the confidence in people's voices to call out bad behavior, the ability for people to speak up and say, people need to be seen. People need to be heard. You don't get to treat people like this anymore for the almighty dollar. That is shifting. Is it gone? No. But have we made progress? Yes. And so anybody to me that wants to rise in their career, advance in life, empathic intelligence, learning how to be empathetic with your fellow human man, is going to take you a long way in this world.
Yeah, I will agree with that 100%. I had to learn empathy, and it was hard for me. I'm just going to be totally transparent. It was hard because I grew up in a military family. My mom was married 4 times. 3 of those guys were all Army guys, military men. So it was tough growing up within that environment. It was like, you will do this. You will do that. It was high discipline. There was high pressure to perform. It was like, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. It was like one of those things that, man, I didn't want to let my dads down. And I learned that throughout my military career. But I never really saw it as my way or the highway. And I had a dad that was my way or the highway. But at the end of that, if you don't tie certain things to consequences, I truly believe that you will not hold yourself accountable. What are your thoughts between the difference of consequences and accountability?
Yeah, well, let's unwrap that a little bit. So one of the things that I think is the messaging that you got as a child. So, you know, fuck up. You know, be a man, don't show your emotions. And then our emotional literacy was so truncated that everybody kind of grew up, or at least if you're over the age of 35, you grew up in a world where it was like all the emotions are mad, sad, and glad. Like every emotion falls under the mad, sad, and glad category. And like, well, how about hopeful and distressed and anxious? And really and truly, you've never heard anxiety spoken about and addressed at a level of mental health really until like the last 8 years. It's now become a perfectly acceptable thing to talk about, whereas it was taboo, you know, not that long ago. And so when we talk about consequences, we have to ask ourselves about the unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. What are the unintended consequences of you not being able to express your emotions, of you having an army environment or a culture that says men act this way, women act this way, or, you know, grow up, you know, don't be a baby. Or the suck it up expressions, don't express your emotions. And so I think you have to unpack all of that to say, I can be accountable for my behaviors. I can also be accountable for what I was taught. And then I need to be accountable for what am I going to learn? What am I going to educate myself on so that I can play better going forward?
Yeah, and that's where I think that the power of that conversation, that inner voice, really kind of plays in, because I really believe that a lot of people hold themselves back with that inner self-talk, and I do too. I mean, it's one of those things that it took me a long time to understand that, man, those vendor voices are powerful if you can have the conversation with them. And I think that so many people are just overwhelming themselves. And I had a great interview one time. I want to share this. I had a great interview with Sean Swanner. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Sean Swanner. So it's out on Amazon, the Sean Swanner story. He climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. He climbed the North and South. He climbed, there was another mountain that he climbed, all with having only one lung and a 2-time cancer survivor. Whoa. And I asked this guy, I was like, man, he goes, what type of courage or confidence did you have to do all of that, knowing that you had like all these odds against you? And I was like, man, that inner voice was crushing me. And he goes, you know what? I gave that inner voice a name. Its name is Cooper. And when he started sharing that with, I'm not going to lie to you, Amy, I started laughing so hard because this guy actually has a name for that inner voice. How empowering is your conversations with your own inner voice? How can you use that to empower yourself?
Well, he's a great example. And so, first of all, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love that I talk about with my clients is you have to invite that inner voice to dinner. You have to invite all those emotions to dinner. And people are like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, most of us want to like shove them out the door, lock and bolt the door, and never let them in the house. The problem is then they come in through the chimney, and they come in through the back door, and they come in through the window. They're not going to leave you alone. So you might as well just open the front door, invite them to dinner, and let them have their say. You know, serve them whatever you're in the mood for, your favorite meal. Give it to them as well, and then say, what are you here to teach me? What do you want me to know? Because this is the crazy thing about those voices. They want to protect you. They're not necessarily helpful, but their job is to keep you safe. It's your protective persona. So as soon as you invite Cooper to dinner, Cooper's got a lot to say. And then over dessert, you'll literally say to Cooper, Cooper, I heard you. I heard everything you said. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for keeping me safe. Now it's time for you to go. And Cooper will leave. And he won't come in the back window because he just had a feast with you. Mm-hmm. And now you can choose to go forward healthy and of your own accord and play with what I call, Terry, your soulful self. So your protective persona has been heard. Now your soulful self gets to go climb Mount Everest.
I love that. You know, and it reminds me of opportunities versus possibilities. And here's the reason why I say that. Because so many people only look surface level, skin deep. And that's where you discover the opportunities, right there, close within close proximity. But when you are able to dive deep within your soul of things, that's when you will discover the possibilities. Let's talk about opportunities versus possibilities, because I think that there's a distinct difference between the two that people just really don't understand the full power of. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that most of us limit our possibility based on what we've been told by others. And so we often give our power away. Mm-hmm. So there's a really scary statistic that's easy to remember, and that's because it's 9, 10, 11, so easy math. 9 out of 10 kids by age 11 have been told they're not good at something. So some adult came along and said, you know, you're terrible at baseball. You're terrible at the guitar. You can't draw. Why did you make the sky purple? The sky is blue. And we take those messages as a young kid, and we limit ourselves in possibility. And so we start to shut down and truncate what the world could give us and how we could give back, not realizing that we just took on somebody else's baggage. And so the first thing that we have to do of our own accord, of our own adult volition, is to say, can I expand my definition of possibility? Can I look out at the world and realize that I have more choices than I think that I have? And by the way, choices keep you sane. The more that you have, the saner you are. But expanding that possibility, and then I'm kind of controversial on this, but Terry, I think you might get where I'm going at this. First of all, let me re-say that. I know you're going to understand this. I hope that other people will understand this. Opportunities just present themselves when you're open to possibility. Opportunities appear when you're willing in your mind to believe that it's possible. So I'm going to say that when you start believing that things are possible, opportunities start to show up. That's what I want to say on that.
I love that. And I love the play on words here. That's why I love talking with you, because, we play with words. They're our playground, and I love playing around with words. I paraphrase the crap out of words. I'll sit here, look at things. How many different ways can I modify, tweak, or change this? Can I twist it over here, kind of tweak it over there? And that's what really kind of helps us as authors, as entrepreneurs, as business people, as speakers, leaders, if you will. That helps us develop those stories. And I truly believe that stories is powerful. And that's one of the things that I'm working on as well, too, is stories, the power of storytelling. Taking, looking at someone where they're at, where they're struggling, the roadblocks, the hardships, those adversities within life, and your story builds that bridge between the possibilities that you can take them. And it's all through the powers of story. So tell me, what is your thoughts on stories and how you can use stories to within your leadership?
Well, one of the things that I love to do, and you and I relate to this both as keynote speakers, is I love to tell stories on stage. And it's kind of the same thing in sales. So I did a sales training just last week. I was talking to a sales group, and we were talking about story and the power of story. And they're sort of like, well, then how do we talk about our company? And I said, you don't sell your company by talking about your company. You sell your company by telling a story about your customers. And so I said, the best way to tell you about Acme Company is to tell you about Duck. The best way to tell you about XYZ Company is to tell you about Shiva or Raj. And so one of the things that I think is so powerful is taking that opportunity. And so I had a great thought. I'm going to tell you a story because I believe in story and I love to tell stories. So I was coaching a woman who had to go to a networking event. And this was 2 weeks ago. So she's just gotten through like the Thanksgiving stuff. She's burned out. She's exhausted. And she says, I have to go network for 4 hours. I was like, I don't want to do it. And I said, not 4 hours. I said, it's one conversation at a time. I said, and every time that you go to have a conversation with somebody, you're not pitching your product. I said, I want you to show up like you're the girlfriend, like you're the guy friend. And I don't mean that in like a romantic way. I meant like you're connecting with somebody that you care about in your life who's a friend, and you're there to talk to them passionately about what it is that you're doing. And I said, and that they have to know about it. I said, it's no different than if I were to show up, Terry, and say, this is my favorite whatever. This is my favorite thing. Terry, you have to know about it. Terry, have you read this book yet? Terry, have you heard this? That's genuine passion. I said, you're not going to this networking event to pitch. I said, and do me a favor, don't give anybody a business card unless they ask for it. Mm-hmm. Just go and tell your story about why you're passionate about stuff. Yeah. And by the way, I texted after her, and she was like, oh, my God, I've got 12 business leads. And I was like, yeah, because you just tell a story.
I love it. I was on stage with Onyx Singhal one time. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Onyx Singhal. I was on stage with him, and I was speaking, and I turned around, and I looked at him, and I totally went into pitch mode after I was speaking to the audience, and because it was a setup is what it was, because as I was talking about me, my business, and the things of this, that, and the other, I turned around, I looked at Onyx Singhal, and I said, and I'm going to share your book next, kind of a thing, and it was funny, because he was about ready to launch his book, Escape, at the time, oh my goodness, man, when I walked off the stage, I was handing out business cards, networking like crazy, and this, that, and the other. And Onyx came up and he goes, now that's how you give a pitch. That's how you kind of do the things right there. And the funny thing was, it was actually his event. So it was actually at his event. He was doing the Escape launch. And I went up there and kind of, not necessarily out pitched, but really just kind of showed the audience of like how you do that. And I truly believe that's where story, that's where having, your ducks in a row, so to speak, having all that together. When you're up on stage, and this has happened to me before as well, too. I've got up there, just had a complete brain fart, like what I'm going to say. What do you do in those moments of like absolute, like, oh, my God, I lost track of what it was that I was going to say? How do you overcome that moment right there?
Well, first of all, you're still the expert on stage, and people are rooting for you. They're rooting for you because they're there so that you can help them. I mean, we're all me-centered. And me, to me, is an acronym for just mind and ego. So we're all me-centered. So if you've got a brain fart on stage, anybody who's listening, whether it's a presentation in a boardroom or on a big stage, remember that they just want you to succeed because your success is their success. So you can do a couple different things. You can either own it and been like, oh, I just had a brain fart. Okay, oh, here's what I wanted to tell you. This is why it was so important. And I ping-pong to another thought that's just as important. So you can come back to it. Or take a deep breath. They'll wait for you. while you gather your thoughts, because while you're gathering your thoughts, they're getting ready to hear the power of your words. So there are times, I've been speaking on stage for 23 years, and I still love it, and I still get fired up. But every now and then I have that moment where I'm like, have I said this? Like, have I already delivered this? Like, especially if I'm like, you know, 3 keynotes in a week pre-pandemic. But if I'm traveling and it was like, okay, wait a minute, did I tell them this story? I just pause, and it's like, okay, let me just get ready. Let me just pull this together. Because they're going to wait for you. And by the way, this is a great conversation technique too. So if I've lost my train of thought and I'm just talking to you in a relaxed environment, Terry, I have every right to pause and just pull my thoughts together so that I can give you the best next word choice. And that's just a sign of respect.
Dame Dash taught me that as well too. And I love that. I interviewed Dame Dash for over 2 hours. Oh my goodness. It was a phenomenal. Dame Dash definitely doesn't give everybody 2 hours of his time.
By the way, that's reflective of you, Terry. That's awesome.
And I loved it. And that was one of the things that he said that he talked to me about. I mean, there was a lot of golden nuggets in there, but he talked about the power of the pause. And it's not, sometimes it's for effect, but it's also time to reflect and gather your thoughts, just the way that you expressed it right there. And I love it. And sometimes I'll use the power of the pause as well too. And it's a very good tool. And I think that a lot of speakers don't understand, because you want to get it all out there. You want to say this, you want to just, I got to get this all out. It's like, you get so excited, sometimes you lose track. But the power of the pause allows yourself to catch your breath, the audience to catch the breath, understand, kind of take it all in, kind of reflect and use that information. And Amy, I've had a truly phenomenal conversation with you here tonight. I love your smile. I love your energy. I love the things that you're working on. So I got to know the one more thing before we close down. And this is probably the most powerful question that I can ask you here tonight. I wanted to save the best question for last, and that's the future of education. I truly believe that in the last 2 years, we saw this shift within education that really kind of caught a lot of people off guard. Some people excelled, other people's failed. What do you see as the future of education, especially within the last 2 years moving forward? What's the future of education?
I think it's bright. And I don't say that as a Pollyanna. I say that as a realistic optimist. So I started off as an elementary school teacher in the 1980s. So I'm a huge fan of education. I believe in education. I think education changes the world. I think that what we've discovered in the last couple years is that the more individualized we can make it, the brighter our future. So rather than putting 28 children, 36 children, 42 children in a room and saying we're going to teach them all the same way, we're going to get much better at saying, let's meet these children where they're at individually, and the world will be better for it.
I love that. Amy, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me in a conversation tonight. I truly believe that we really empowered a lot of people that watch this and everybody that's going to watch the replay. So tell me, what are you working on next, and how can people best connect with you?
Well, I'm super excited about an educational platform for women leaders around the world. ShegetsIt.com started in the pandemic, because I saw a huge gap with women leaving the workplace after all this advancement that we made in equal pay and in promotions and including women in the workplace. And so I just got super fired up and started shegetsit.com. And the cool thing, Terry, is we're advancing women around the world right now. So women who need to learn how to use their voice confidently and effectively in their personal lives, at work, I'm all about it. And I'm just super fired up about it. So shegetsit.com is a new platform that's got me really ignited and fired up about changing the way that women can play. And I don't mean this in a trite way, to be more empowered. So I'm going to use that word purposely, to be more empowered.
I believe that as well too, and we definitely have the ability to empower a lot of people worldwide, not only with our stories but our message. And I truly believe that. Amy, wishing you all the best and continued success. Thank you so much for joining me here tonight.
It was a privilege, an absolute honor, Terry. Thanks for having me.
All right, stand by, and I'll give you a call right after this if you want to have a follow-on conversation.
Perfect.
All right. Awesome. You guys take care. That was Amy Kay. Man, I've been waiting for this conversation, and Amy truly delivered tonight. So once again, before we go here tonight, if you enjoyed tonight's conversation, make sure you get connected to Amy. In the upper left-hand corner, you're going to see my image and a little drop-down arrow. Go ahead and tap on that. Give Amy a follow. Get on over there. Check out all of the things that she has. Get connected to her. You're going to love it. Amy, thank you so much. We'll see you guys next time. Have a great night.